Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is BJ and I'm an alcoholic. Just by way of housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can also sign up for our email on our website, www.simpleactions.net. I've posted a PayPal link in the chat pod. We'll talk about more during the seventh tradition. And for those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Free to unspeak up.
This is Nate, and I've been here before, but I'm one day away from 30 days.
Yay! That's what's up.
Yeah.
Thanks. Glad you're here, Nate.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, if you're shy, feel free to stick around after the meeting. We'd love to meet you and get to know you. And you guys should all be able to send your contact information to chat for the newcomer. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 4, part 2, which is beer and sex. Please join me in welcoming our panel this evening. We have Lauren P. and Justin S. from Richmond. Thank you guys so much for being here. So I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 67, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So I'm going to pull that up. Bear with me. Alrighty. Just as a refresher, step 4 is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Ms. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And this evening, we are starting with Lauren.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me. I'm Lauren, alcoholic. I have a home group. It's right after this meeting on Monday nights. It's a women's group called Easy Does It in Richmond, Virginia, on Zoom right now. But I have a sponsor and she knows she's my sponsor, and I sponsor other women. And I know they're, you know, I know I'm their sponsor. And what else? Sobriety Day is December 30th, 2000. So again, thanks for asking me. I can't tell you how excited I was to hear that the topic was fear and sex. That's like just my favorite thing to talk about in front of people I don't know. But at the same time, this program has taught me like how to talk about that stuff, you know, how it relates to my spiritual condition. And I've come a long way, as John Mason will tell you, and Justin. But anyway, so this part, you know, this first part that you read is like, I forgot how much time I have in like 5 minutes.
About 5 minutes, but, you know, go as long as you feel like you need.
Okay. I forgot John Mason and I stole your meeting format and started North Side Step. So, but it's been a while since I've had this format. So I love this format. Okay. So fear, you know, the thing that stuck out to me tonight when you read it was, the whole lesson of setting the ball rolling. That was a super difficult lesson for me to learn, to hear at first, to chew, to wrestle with. I didn't want to have any part in that. I'll just go ahead and get it out of the way, because I know John wants to hear it, that I was like a feral cat in my active use. I used from the age of 11 to 24 and went to depths that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And I did fist fight a lot. To coin the phrase, I put the lights out often in my drunken stupor. So, you know, I was just fear, you know, you wouldn't have known it from my outer persona or demeanor, but that's the only thing that was like rising to the surface. For context, you know, there was a whole lot going on early childhood and with trauma, and I just operated in life and alcohol was my solution for many years, you know, for a good while to try to tamp that fear down. But it still was the driver. It was the driving force and everything. But you could not have told me that in active drinking, that it, you know, everything was everyone else's fault. I never took any responsibility or any, yeah, just no responsibility for all the misfortunes that I experienced. And I don't know, but tonight, like, this sentence stuck out to me: set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. And it was like that. It was just like emotion, like a constant getting hit by you know, proverbial train, like just through and through throughout my drinking and into sobriety before I really started taking the simple actions and really kind of like embodying those on a spiritual path. So yeah, I mean, it tells us next to, like, which I know we're going to get to in the next paragraph, but just self-reliance. That's how I was raised. That was my survival mode. It's all I needed for a good while until it stopped working. And so the alcohol stopped working. And so fear started to seep through and sort of kind of debilitate me in more ways than it ever had. And self-reliance started to fail me. Because, you know, it tells us it takes us, you know, a certain amount of distance and then it stops working. So, and that's true for me. And so putting these down on paper was, I find the fears list to be one of the most profound experiences in the steps. I mean, they're all important to be worked in order, but I get so much out of the fears. You know, when you why it down, like when you really get down to the root. So I think I'll pass that.
Hi, Justin.
Thanks, BJ. Thanks, Lauren. I'm Justin. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety is February 7th of 2008. Home group is Buford Road Group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other men, and I talk to my sponsor regularly. Pretty much every day, not because I have to, but because I want to. I enjoy talking with him. He's been my same sponsor for the last 13 years. And this is my first go around in AA. You know, I had an 8-year stint and a 2-year stint. And, you know, I guess I'm in uncharted territory. So I'm afraid I'm just going to screw up this whole meeting. So there's my fear right there. You know, I look at fear, you know, when I first came in here and, you know, yeah, I'm a little afraid of heights once I get above like 75 feet, you know, maybe I'm afraid, you know, I don't, you know, after I got here, I really didn't think I was afraid of much. And it took a, you know, sitting down with my sponsor and, listening to him share. But it wasn't until I went through the book with my current sponsor that I had an experience that revealed to me how much fear dominated my life and my decisions, I should say, my decisions ultimately dictated my life. As you know, there was so much going on in my head about, you know, how does this affect me? And is it going to affect me in a bad way? fear, you know, ironically, has dominated my relationships and my ideas in relationships ever since I was a kid, you know. And I look at fear and see, you know, yeah, the run of the mill stuff that you know, fear people aren't going to like me, fear I'm not going, you know, fear of abandonment, fear of you know, not having enough money to pay the bills, fear of, you know, ending up back out on the street. I was one of those guys that just would, you know, toss everything aside for the next party. And, you know, whether it was a job, a house, a relationship, you know, not consciously, but unconsciously, the drink would take me away like that. But when I got here, fear didn't look like it was a huge issue or a problem until I got on this section in our fourth step after we'd written our grudge list down. My sponsor directed me to write down my fears, what they were, why do I have them, you know, and answer that question. And answer the question where self-reliance failed me. And, you know, it wasn't too many fears into that I realized, you know, where my self-reliance, you know, took me every time. And this paragraph sums it up beautifully because, you know, it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And I was on the phone with my sponsor for the first couple of years in sobriety. Why me? Why me? Why me? And he would say that he would tell me that quote. And you know, it kind of stung, but it was the truth, you know, and you know what they say about the truth. And it brought me back to, you know, having my feet on the ground and going back to square one, which is, you know, what am I doing here? Am I trying to run the show and make decisions based on fear? And the answer was always yes in any of those situations. So I'm going to close up with just saying one thing about this, but, you know, it goes on and talks about, you know, fear a little bit more here. But, you know, when these things do come up, I notice them a little bit sooner, but sadly to say that I am still noticing fear from time to time. It just doesn't dominate my actions and decisions today, but I do discuss them with my sponsor when they come up, or, you know, with sponsees or even anybody for that matter, you know, so that way I'm not, you know, unconsciously acting on fears, because I've been doing that up until, you know, and into my sobriety, and, it's never paid off. It's always caused me more harm than good. It's always caused problems. So I'm going to pass with that because I know we've got more to read. Thanks.
Awesome. Our next reading is on page 8. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Lauren?
Thank you. So, yeah, I love what Justin just said, too, that the fear, you know, it tells us that we outgrow fear. It gives us a little, you know, like mini step within a step. I like that, especially with this one and the 10th step. Like sub steps of what to do. Like we ask God, you know, to remove our fear. But I really like the humanness of what Justin just talked about, how, yeah, they still crop up because we're human, but that, you know, we don't, that we have this, like this blueprint of how not to react and out of fear or unconsciously, I think you said unconsciously acting out of fear. So I really appreciated that. This part just gives me I just love this part. I came into AA an atheist, and, you know, maybe an atheist to agnostic somewhere in there. And it almost took me out. I almost could not find a path for myself. And thankfully, people in this program kind of guided me and loved me until I could find some, you know, find something to hold on to. And now this God reliance is, and it's not perfect. I mean, I will be the first to tell you that, but I believe it's a practice. And, you know, luckily it tells us right in our book that we have a daily, you know, chance, daily reprieve. And sometimes that looks like me going a bunch of days without doing the thing that I know, you know, the simple actions that I know I need to do, and I can feel it. I feel it pretty quickly. But this part about just our reliance upon God, the infinite God rather than finite self, and it just was such a shift. And it was difficult for me to make that shift. So I want to acknowledge that it's not always just easy. Even though you would look at my life and be like, oh, wouldn't you just rather choose this way of life rather than, you know, like homelessness and awfulness? But it was hard because I didn't want to let go of the self-reliance because it had worked for so long. But I love the idea of, so one of my previous sponsors had me do like a spiritual sentence, and it basically said, if I trusted and relied upon God fully, I would blank and I would not blank. And I needed it that simple, and I needed it for each fear, each time I do an inventory, so that I, you know, can see in plain sight on paper what it means to become God reliant. And so over time, that's really helped me just to wire it down, to simplify it. And one of the biggest hangups that I had with like spirituality or anything like that was I, you know, in like a drunken stupor, like I'd been up for like 3 days bar fighting and stuff, I'd be like, religion is just a crutch that people use. And, you know, who knows what else I was going on about. but, you know, one of the first things in this program that kind of like hooked me was like the logic around a, you know, an actual crutch, which is if I have a broken leg, I'm going to use a crutch. It's actually really like foolish not to, because I won't heal as quickly if I just walk on a broken leg. So that was really helpful to me when, you know, here, when it talks about like, how it's actually courageous to find something that gives you find something other than yourself that you can draw from, that you can rely on and get through life. And it took time for me, and it takes everybody. Everybody's different, but I'm really glad that I was able to kind of grasp this enough to build on it over time. I'll pass.
That was awesome, Lauren. I'd like to add to that, you know, the educational variety, that experience I've had myself as well, just like Lauren. And I think that for me, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and watching you guys get sober and have an experience and share your experience and talk about God really kind of primed me for what's ahead, because I didn't have any kind of relationship with God or anybody that was of, you know, substance or had any sort of value other than, you know, what's in it for me. And my thoughts about God and relying on God was, well, how does God know what I want? How does God know what I need? And how do I know God's going to take care of little old me, this giant universe? For me, that was the big question at the beginning. And, you know, it was always directed to me in the beginning to just, you know, ask God to help you stay sober. You know, I've been doing that since I got sober this last time, and I've done it before, but this time, you know, I really pay attention to the track record, and it's worked. But beyond that, you know, I think after we get in here and we stop drinking and, you know, we go through that roller coaster in the beginning, at least that's the way it was for me. I think we start to really pay attention, and, or at least I was really like, okay, God, you know, I'm like right on the edge here, and I barely have enough money to pay these bills, and you know, I'm going to jump ahead for 1 second and just, you know, talk about an amends experience where I'm, you know, like having to pay somebody the money that I really don't have yet. And well, what does that leave for me? And experiences like that down the road, you know, that really revealed more to me than I would have ever guessed. But at this point, it was theory. You know, it was just looking at this, you know, at face value. Okay, you know, I'm unapologetically going to depend on God and not be ashamed of my dependency. Sorry, my dog saw a dog out there. So that was the mailman. So I'm sorry. Anyways, God, please save me. So from that point of going through the fifth step with, or, you know, this section of the fourth step with a sponsor, I really didn't have any kind of experience yet, but I've been able to walk through a lot of different difficult situations with fear kind of going on in the background with a little bit of faith and praying and asking God to remove the fears when they crop up. And it's kind of a trial and error basis for me. You know, I had to just give it a shot. And, you know, what else do I have to lose? You know, what am I going to do? Go back to drinking? What am I going to do? Go back to being, you know, self-reliant? I mean, I have the evidence all piled up next to me. Like, this is what your life looks like when you're reacting to life based on self-centered fear. Now try this. Okay, well, how do I know this is going to work? Well, how do you know it's not going to work? You know, that's the question that I had to ask myself. And, you know, that's when I just decided to be all in, just like my drinking. I was always all in on that. So, you know, for me coming in here and trying to be all in with God was a slow, but, and sometimes even painful process where I would take some of that back or kind of hold on to some, you know, to some stuff that I felt like I could still influence in some way. And today is so much easier to live in the moment, but it takes work and sometimes it's difficult to do that. And just take actions today and not think about tomorrow or not worry about like, well, where am I going to be next week or next month or what's going to happen down the road? So with that, you know, it keeps things interesting. Let's put it that way. And I'll pass.
You guys pull up your next. Third reading is also on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
So, like, 2 years sober me is freaking out that I have to talk about this in front of people, but current day me, I'm totally cool with this. And I really appreciate the way, you know, cause you have to think about like the societal norms at the time and all that when this was written. And I really, really appreciate this like buffer paragraph into like a really difficult subject that can mean a lot of different things and a lot of different, you know, shame for all, pretty much anyone. But I really like this paragraph, how they kind of like go through all the ways that people judge others or judge sex. And then they say, and we're not going to do any of that. You know, it's like, I appreciate that a lot. Just from my personal experience working with sponsors, and not everyone that I worked with did that. I try to do that with other sponsees. I think the thread that we'll see in the next couple paragraphs is like, you know, how do we weigh it through if it's being selfish, you know, like that, it kind of boils down to that for me. So I like how they just kind of talked about the absurd extremes, the controversy around it, and then the most like equalizing human sentence you could ever say is we all have sex problems, you know, and so that just kind of like, I don't know, this is hard, you know, this is hard work, and this program doesn't work if we don't work it. And so just to have that, just like in context with this particular paragraph, to have that as we kind of venture into this interesting topic with someone, you know, that we may already be like nervous about talking about this stuff with, is just was helpful. And just the idea that, I think it says it later, that like God is really, it's like between us and God, and who judges this. And yes, we have this like step to run it through, and, you know, but it really shouldn't be used as a way to like further shame people. And I just, and I've seen that, and it's not good. And I think it's, everybody is just doing the best they can with what they have. But yeah, I'm glad that it kind of like takes us through if we're really paying attention to this part in the book.
So Justin, I'm an alcoholic, and I really was shocked that they had a whole section in the book about this. But it's so necessary, because it's a real chaotic area that I came into sobriety with. For me, I really didn't look at my behavior too closely. Didn't want to, was afraid to, you know, really didn't. I had a lot of, I guess, instances where I used sex for every kind of validation, as far as, you know, somebody to tell me that I'm okay, somebody to fill that void in my life. I often would lie to myself in order to be in a relationship, and just because I didn't want to be alone, just because I was afraid, you know, and fear being right before sex conduct is ironic, because most of my sex conduct was based on fear. A lot of my decisions were, or, you know, my instincts were sort of to overcome a fear, you know, and, you know, that's not the way to show up in any kind of relationship. That's all I can say about that, you know, and I think, you know, the following paragraphs are going to go into some details, which we can get further into. But, you know, I was one of those people that, you know, it was like drinking, can't imagine life without it, you know. And they said, well, why don't you try staying out of a relationship for a year, first year in sobriety? Oh, okay. All right. That was the longest 6 months of my life. I figured that was enough, you know. But for me, it was like, I didn't understand, you know, what I'm supposed to be, you know, experiencing here, until later on, you know, when I really started to answer some of the questions that are asked further on in this passage. So I'll pass.
Alrighty. Next reading is on page 89. We reviewed our own conduct over the past years. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
So, yeah, to follow up with that first paragraph, and then it goes right into telling us exactly what to do, how to run it through, and that the first thing is selfish and dishonest. And, you know, we've already read at this point about how selfishness and self-centered is the root of, you know, all our troubles. And I'm like, Justin, I was a chaotic mess in this area, you know, from a young age all the way through until I finally had a pretty significant spiritual experience between me and my higher power about this topic and relationships in general. And like, thank God for the sex ideal. I really love that practice, because I just was, you know, I continued to be a tornado in partners' lives. Pretty well into sobriety, I'll be really honest with you. And now I'm in I just will say I'm in a loving marriage. We have a child together. It happened, you know, when I finally gave it over to God. I'll just say that when I finally gave it over, because I, you know, like I came a long way. I invited God into my work life and this part of my life and this part of my life, but then my sex life, my romance life, I was like, no, I got this. You know, I was just sure that I knew better. And I, to be honest, like I had a sponsor fire me, like I guess the term, whatever, but fire me because she read the part in the book that says, you know, basically if we don't kind of get it together, like in so many words, where, you know, we're not continuing to cause harm to others, that we're sure, you know, I think it says like we're pretty sure to drink again. And I wouldn't stop. I wouldn't stop the harm that I was causing, and the selfish actions in this area. So, but yeah, that sex ideal, I have like 4, and it's so cool to go back and look at them over time and just sort of see how they like shaped. And, the key part in it is that we ask God to mold it. Because I don't, you know, I'm going to ask for like the first one. I said, it was hilarious. It was like, you know, cute butt or something silly, but, you know, it over time, the integrity of the list, like increased and the depth and all that stuff. And so, and I can only tell you that that was, attributed by the relationship with God that I, you know, was, that was being formed over time, and sponsors being like, you know, this is, you know, you have to ask God into this equation and make, you know, increase, like make the umbrella, the God umbrella bigger to cover this area of your life. Because I guarantee you, I would have, drank again if I had continued in the behavior patterns, the destructive behavior patterns to self and others, in this area. And just, yeah, like Justin said, looking for validation, like wounded, just looking for to be chosen, and just self-sabotaging at the same time, you know, just all of that mixed up together. So yeah, I have a sponsee doing this now, the sex ideal. And it's kind of like you can see the light turning on, because this part of life can just be so painful, and it's really great to have this like pretty direct way of community, you know, dealing with it with you and God and one of, you know, and a sponsor. So I will pass it.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm Justin. I'm alcoholic, and I think about how much I can identify with you know, the behavior that I came in here with, and the selfishness, dishonesty, inconsiderate. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? I mean, that pretty much summed up all of my relationships. I mean, that was, those were like the highlight, you know, it was like sprinkled with just enough, you know, good times to keep my, you know, dumb self sticking around. And what happens is I look back and I start to see, you know, maybe there's a pattern here, and maybe the pattern is, you know, down to one common denominator, and that's me. And I keep showing up in those relationships, and I can't understand why, you know, they always, you know, start so sweet and end so bitter, and I don't understand it, you know. And what led me to have a different experience was when the pain got great enough, and that really is the truth. It was, you know. Today, I look at my ideals about what I value in a relationship with anyone, you know, not just a romantic partner, but with anyone, or the values and the character that we cherish the most in, you know. And and the big kicker is this: am I willing to live up to those? Am I willing to pursue those things? Am I willing to set an example? And I've always heard people share like, well, if you want someone to be a certain way, you better damn well be willing to become the person that you want them to be. And for me, that really kind of woke me up to, you know, maybe I'm being too much of a perfectionist, and like some people share, I'm seeking it in others, you know, and not so much in myself. And the change really does kind of rest on, you know, what am I willing to take a look at? And what am I willing to, you know, see, needs to change. And this really did help, you know, but it was a slow process for me getting to that place where that future ideal started to look like a sane, healthy one. You know, there was a lot of unhealthy ideas that I just, you know, it was almost like the next step down the road. It was kind of like, you know, some of the stuff, you know, still look, you know, appealing to me. And today, you know, doesn't so much and at all, actually, you know, the reality of it is that, you know, I've got, you know, my daughter who is now a grown adult and she's watched me, you know, and, you know, sadly enough, she's been through a lot of those relationships with me. Bittersweet, but, you know, at the same time, it is humbling when my daughter can talk about my past relationships in a way that, you know, it's almost comical, but it embarrasses me to the point where it's like, I wish I, you know, look back, had I set a better example, you know. In that way, you know, there's a lot of growth to be had today. You know, we can look back and joke and laugh because, you know, I'd like to think I'm on the other side of things, or at least, you know, that old me, which was to jump ship and move, you know, out of a relationship when, you know, it required me to act differently. I'd like to think that my future ideal is to be, you know, stick and stay and grow through the challenges and difficulty. I will say that, you know, the biggest problem in my life is that, you know, when the heat's on, I just cut and run. And that's been habitual, you know, since I was a teenager. And, you know, I could say a million things and put the blame on a million things, but, you know, the buck stops here when we get sober, you know. I can't blame anyone else for my behavior. I have to really take a square look at what's going on. What am I doing? What am I doing to hurt others? You know, and am I being honest with myself? Am I being honest with this person? Not in a bad way, but you know, those are the things that I needed to learn how to date. First of all, you know, I needed to learn how to get to know people, and I'm still learning how to do that on a regular basis, on a platonic level, you know, not romantic level. I feel like a child in so many senses, and it's embarrassing because I'm a grown adult and I had to learn how to date in sobriety when I got here. But, you know, at least I got here and I got sober. Not a whole lot of people get to experience that. So in that sense, I'm very grateful. My ideals have definitely grown as I've stuck around and stayed sober. Thank God, you know, I did mature a little bit, not a whole lot, but a little bit, and I'll pass.
Righty, guys. Next reading is also on 69. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answers will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
All right. So, the big thing out of this one for me is willingness. And, you know, because I've done work up to this point, to kind of get something down, get a lot down on paper in this area. But a lot of it comes to willingness. Now amends, I have only made one amends to an ex or something. But I was usually told that it was, you know, not necessary. And I think a lot of it is like checking motives, right? Like it says here, causing more harm. And that can mean a lot of different things. But for me, a lot of times it was self-seeking, like wanting to, you know, to maybe rekindle or at least like my ego wanted to like show them like, oh, now I'm not going to hold you at knife point because you won't let me go get booze at 6 a.m. Okay. You know, like I'm doing better now. Look at me. And that was all self-based. And I just love how they just say, treat sex like any other problem. like in this book, it talks, I can't remember how many times, but it says God will solve all your problems, all of them. And I've seen it happen one by one. And so at this point, I have tangible evidence. However, I still need to go to meetings to be reminded of this because my brain will forget. But you know, I have my problems have been solved by something I cannot explain other than God enough times that, you know, I have to believe that. And that's a really hopeful feeling, and that I get to experience out of this process, which really isn't supposed to have me centered, but you know, it's a kind of like a residual effect that we get, that we have this hope that God, you know, that if we do the work, if we put it up and we meditate and we really listen, because I'm telling you, I only just recently learned how to listen, you know, and it's not that I've even learned it, but just like, again, it's a practice, and meditation is a practice. And, you know, when I have gotten, it says the right answer will come if we want it. When I do listen and I do hear, you know, kind of like what I think is the answer, I used to wonder, oh, well, how am I going to know if that's self-will? Like if that's just a thought that my ego has come up with. And, you know, because I've experienced it, I know that it's emphatically different. You know, when you listen for the right answer to come, it is in a calm, you know, point blank. You don't have to struggle to hear it. It's just there. And it's usually not what I want to actually do. So that's also how I know. But yeah, I just love this. And it's just God alone. That's like that's it for me. You know, God alone. Ooh, it's going to make me cry. It's just amazing how this program can transform us. If we, you know, if we do the work. So I will pass it.
Thanks. What I found is that, I did start praying a lot, you know, when the pain got great enough from all the conduct, I guess, that we talk about, you know, the selfishness, you know, I didn't want to have, those experiences anymore. And what came about is I did start praying specifically about relationships and how God would have me be in those relationships. You know, that thing about when the pain gets great enough, when things aren't working, you know, and I will say this, and I'm going to pass because there's a lot of good stuff that's left to read. The one thing that really sticks out to me is the relationships I needed to learn how to have first and foremost were with God, with my sponsor, and with my home group. And it was through those relationships that I learned how to have other relationships. And I think that really did kind of guide me towards having a future ideal. And I'll pass.
Okay, it's read our final on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in such questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you've already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of about yourself.
Oh, gosh. I just love, I was just sitting here thinking, like, I had such a problem in this area. Like, I'm talking about misery, you know, I caused it and I felt it deeply. And to be able to have this where we can earnestly pray. And like I said, that in and of itself was hard because I just didn't do that. So this program literally like taught me how to do things, like how to respect myself, how to, you know, pray, like these really basic things, how to take care of myself, and how to be sane. I mean, these are like major, you know, ideals here. And then I think one of the biggest ones is it talks about the strength to do the right, you know, the right thing. And that's also in the 11th step, like not only the, you know, praying for the will for us, but also the power to carry it out. And that's, you know, thankfully I found, you know, I have found a pathway to being able to develop and maintain a relationship with God, with the God of my understanding, so that, you know, that we can just like have this continuous, you know, because stuff's going to block me from him. I don't know if people are sober longer than me, let me know, but I'm pretty sure stuff like is going to just keep on coming. Like, you know, Bill says trials and, you know, the certain trials and low spots that will come, and like, what do we do? We work in self-sacrifice for others. And that's what it talks about here. And just sort of like that saved me. It saved me. And I just cannot tell you, like, you know, how much that saved me. And I won't go into this like particular turning point for me, but it came down to just me and God in the woods on a walk. And I had this, you know, this experience. And then 6 months later I met Reed, and, you know, and it was like a sane, sound relationship. And it's most days it still is. So I'm just really grateful for y'all and for you asking me to speak tonight. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thanks. I'm looking at the praying for guidance. And, you know, that was a big struggle, only because I didn't have the answers given to me. There was no cliff notes or cheat sheet on how to go about being in you know, a place where I'm seeking out a future ideal. And, you know, the answers did not come, you know, for a long time. And sometimes they still don't. When I feel like I'm in a moment of limbo or uncertainty, that's when, you know, I tend to slow down a little bit now. But it does make it clear that, you know, we've just faced a lot. With that, you know, I walk away from this particular experience kind of, you know, it does kind of take, and I will say it does take a little bit of wind out of my sails, because a lot of my, you know, previous ideas and beliefs are kind of not shattered, but just sort of like it just set aside, you know. And it's like, okay, well, what's next? How do I move on from here? And in that, you know, that was where the educational variety, the slow, you know, sticking around and continuing to work with others. And, you know, for me, that moment when I have a sponsee who shares with me the exact same defects that I have, it's so awesome. It makes me feel like, you know what, I'm not alone on this. And it's not like my problems are unique, or my challenges and struggles in sobriety are unique to only me. It takes away that I feel like I'm doing this thing on my own, you know, even though I know my sponsor, you know, is still the guy I talk, you know, candidly with about everything. You know, it's nice to be able to talk candidly with people that I'm walking through these steps with, and we're walking this path together, because, you know, it makes my situation not so unbearable, I guess you could say, when it gets to that point where I'm thinking, God, I'm just so disgusted with the way things were and the way I was, and I don't want to be this way anymore in relationships. And what do I do? And, you know, and how do I move on from here, God? And how do I become the better man? You know, how do I become, you know, the better husband, boyfriend, father, you know, son, you know, all those relationships that I want to show up and do better in. And it's not just about sex, but, you know, that tends to be a sensitive one. But it's been great, you know, and I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks.
Thank you guys so much. That was wonderful. Encourage all you guys to stick around and thank our panel after the meeting. We'll let everybody unmute after the Lord's Prayer and tell them what an amazing job they did. Awesome, guys. Thanks again. The seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements at this time?
Be able to when else I have pull it up. I hear somebody unmuting. Does somebody have an announcement? Okay. Well, this home group is putting on a workshop next Wednesday, as in June the 2nd at 7 p.m. Based on the family afterward. And we will have Polly P. and her son James L. sharing from 7 to 8:30. And I think part of that's going to be a question and answer section. And you'll just click on the simple actions link, the same one that you used for tonight, to get to that meet. Anybody else? None. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Matt, I think I saw a message from you, so definitely stick around, man. We'd love to meet you. And if you're shy, you can also email us at info@simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our wonderful panel one more time? And thank you to all who participated. We will unmute everyone after the Lord's Prayer and give you a chance to say thank you to Justin and Lauren. And Malcolm has volunteered. Page
24.
I'm going to put that up on
this
for you.
Thank you, BJ. Hey, folks. My name is Malcolm. I'm an alcoholic, and this is from page 164 of the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize you know only a little. We know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Malcolm. And I am now going to close us out with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Great job, y'all. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you,
Justin. So thank you, Lauren.
Good stuff. Thank you, Justin, Lauren. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
Greatly appreciate it.
Great job tonight. Thanks so much.